This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
I look at a book when I read a book. Was I relieved that it ended, or did I want more? I wanted more. And Jeff Perlman did such an unbelievable job on the book. But I wanted to read about the next year and the next year. But, you know, Jeff didn't sign on to write about the history of the Lakers. But he did sign on to come on our show and talk about the book. And he's here right now, the noted author, Jeff Perlman. Jeff, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How are you today?
I just want to say, if you're willing to pay me a lot of money, I'm happy to just continuously write for you about the Lakers. You just want a daily,
wow, like a
daily
a personal blog.
That'd be awesome.
No problem with that.
Let's talk money off the air.
I'm in.
All right. So I, in promoting this earlier, there's so many aspects to the book I want to get to, but the one thing that jumps out at me is that throughout this run, Kobe is not only not likable, but he's loathsome. I mean, he's somebody that you don't even want to be around the way it's described in the book. And in death now, he's looked at as one of the altruistic people of all time. Did he change, or are people just rewriting history, Jeff?
Oh, man. It's a pretty heavy question. I think there's a little of both there. I really do. That sounds like a lame answer. I think he was very immature during those years, 96 to 04. Mm-hmm. He had a need to dominate you. He had a need to show who he was. He went through many versions of himself, whether it was Kobe imitating Michael Jordan, Kobe trying to be Allen Iverson and Stephon Marbury, Kobe trying to be Heart Kobe, getting tattooed. I mean, he was so, you know, there was an interview I did. It was a spare interview with a journeyman named Paul Shirley. And he gave me a quote. It just has stuck with me. He said, it was as if Kobe saw himself in a movie writing his own dialogue. And I really think that kind of explains it. Like, he just didn't know who he was a lot of the times. And I do think as he got older, definitely as he had kids, as he stepped away from basketball and also had a little of his own sports mortality, becoming less of a player, I think he definitely did mature. But I'm not sure these guys loved him later in his life. I don't think he was a lovable figure. He just was a nicer guy away mm-hmm. from it all.
And just the story of how Phil was able to make everything work, specifically between Shaq and Kobe.
Well, I think one of the things he did really well is he kind of left it alone. It's very similar to the playbook he used with Dennis Rodman. When Dennis Rodman was with the Bulls, and you know, he's coming from San Antonio where they micromanaged him, and Detroit where they micromanaged him, and he comes to Chicago and Phil's like, "All right, do what you got to do as long as you're ready to play." There was a lot of weird bickering in the locker room between Shaq and Kobe, a lot of passive-aggressive bickering, a lot of the media shuffles to Kobe, here's this. Then they go back to Shaq to tell him what Kobe said. Then they go back to hear more. And it would have been very easy for Phil Jackson to be heavy-handed. He definitely sided with Shaq over Kobe. He was definitely more empathetic to Shaq than Kobe. Kobe was kind of poison to the triangle offense a lot of the times. But he was not overly heavy-handed. He was smart about it. And he sort of, you know, he really wanted this thing to blow up more than it was. And he just walked gingerly. He was very smart, actually.
Go ahead, Peter.
I'm sorry, Michael. I was going to say, Jeff, how many people told you incredible stories about Kobe, maybe not all of them the best, and after his passing, reached back out to you with concerns about what they said?
All right, that's such a good question. The answer is nobody.
Wow.
I will say one player, I won't name who, read the book. He actually got an advanced copy of the book and called me, and he's like, "I feel really nervous about this." And I get it, because again, I finished the book before Kobe died, added an author's note after he died, sort of explaining this is just a portion of Kobe's life. It's not the entirety of his life. But I, you know, 60% of people, those interviews are drastically different if they're done after Kobe dies. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they wouldn't, I don't think they'd say a peep. So you interviewed them at the right time. One thing that this book screams to me, Jeff, and we'll talk with Jeff Perlman, who has a great book coming out, A Three-Ring Circus, about the Lakers' three championships with Shaq and Kobe. I don't want to hear anybody anymore talk to me about chemistry and guys have to get along. That team seems so dysfunctional that they didn't get along, and all they did was win titles. So chemistry's out the window. It's like the Bronx Zoo of 77 and 78. You don't have to like each other to win.
I agree with you 1,000,000%. And I actually think one of the things, one of the lazy assessments of this franchise was Kobe and Shaq. They're, you know, they didn't get along off the court, but on the court, they really gel together. Like, no, they didn't. Like, they were two of the five best players in the game. That's why they gel together. But it's so funny. When Kobe throws Shaq the alley-oop against Portland, and it's this huge moment, and Shaq's, you know, screaming down the court, and he's pointing with both fingers. It's this great moment, and everyone talks about it. And they use it almost as this emblematic moment of Shaq and Kobe. It's actually the opposite. The reason that moment is so magical is because it almost never happened. Like 9 out of 10 times, Kobe's shooting that ball. He's not throwing the alley-oop. And Shaq is complaining that Kobe's shooting the ball. And he's like, why? And they're saying, why didn't you have to pass me the ball? And Kobe's saying, get your fat, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, it worked because they were really, really good. And they had a great coach. And they had the perfect role players who all knew precisely what they were there for. That's why it worked.
And it seems crazy to think about, but you know, I was around that run. I went to all the Laker Net games, you know, covering it for our radio station back in the day, and that was 20 years ago, Jeff. Like, the game has changed crazy. So much, even in popularity. Like, I'm wondering, could it work today with social media and so much more focus? As big as that team was, and as big as the NBA was 20 years ago, I think it's actually much bigger now.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was actually thinking on the court, does it work? Because the idea of having kind of a potted plant center, I'm not saying Shaq was always a potted plant, but it really was, Shaq, you post up down low, and we're going to run the offense through you. I mean, nobody does that anymore. And Shaq would be running around the court, guarding guys who are faster, leaner, and quicker. And it would be an interesting thing on court, whether that would still work even. I do think Shaq has always been very savvy about the media and the way he used the media and the way he came across in the media. And I actually think he'd be very adept, modern purveyor of media. I mean, you see him on TV, he's really good. I think for Kobe, it would have been awkward because there'd be a lot more sort of visuals to go along with the difficulties he had, and maybe we wouldn't see him. If you look back, Kobe was really thought of as kind of a cool, sleek, slick, Slam Magazine, Sports Illustrated, Esquire, People Magazine, you know, sexiest, blah, blah, blah. And he was really kind of a awkward, sort of clumsy kid who was trying to find his way, and that probably shows itself a little more with her tweeting and Instagramming and TikToking all the time.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
After reading the book, you almost have to come to the conclusion, Jeff, that the genius of Phil Jackson was off the court. You know, we keep talking about the triangle, and the book highlights so many times, endless times, that Kobe did what he wanted. He wasn't, nobody was listening. Nobody, they didn't listen to Phil. So Phil just keeping it all together and not having it burble out of control, that was his genius. But in terms of like an X's and O's guy, I wonder about that after I read this book. Kobe just shot when he wanted to shoot.
It's really funny because Tex Winter is really the brain behind the triangle. And Phil used him well and didn't shy away from Tex Winter's philosophy and blah, blah, blah. But it did fall apart. And you really, really saw it in that final season, that 03-04 season, where they bring in Gary Payton, who's the worst triangle point guard ever. He's just a dribble, dribble, shoot guy all the time. And you bring in Karl Malone. And Kobe is just fed up with everything. He's fed up with Fat Shaq. He's fed up with his, you know, he's going through the Eagle Colorado situation. He's just beaten down by this all and tired of it all. And he discards the triangle. Basically discards the triangle and just says, I'm going to shoot as much as I can. And the fact that they made it five games into the NBA Finals, people said, wow, that was a dream team. What a disappointment. It wasn't a disappointment. It's miraculous that that team even made it five deep into the NBA Finals because that thing was exploding by the second.
I wish we had you on for 3 hours, and I hope that people go out and buy the book because there's so much to it. But the Kobe angle is what really, really makes me, you know, want to even read it again. And you talk to so many people, and it seemed like you got to such cooperation from the Lakers. And I wonder, Jeff, that the way the book comes out, and after what happened, as you said, you wrote it before Kobe died. I wonder if the Laker organization is angry at you because this is one of their shining lights, and this is like looking at a statue with pigeon droppings on it. It doesn't reflect that well on one of the people that they've built their brand around. So have you gotten any pushback from the Lakers?
No, but I don't think they've seen the book yet. Believe
okay.
me, I wrote a book, Showtime, about the Magic era, and I lived in New York. Now I actually live in California, and I'm nervous. I'm uncomfortable with this. And I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I say it a million times over. This is just the Kobe during that period. It's not to say he was the Kobe with four daughters who was coaching his kids. Like, it was a period of growth in his life and an awkward period in his life. It doesn't mean it's who he was at 41 when he died. I just try to remind people that and hope I don't get my butt kicked.
What is it? Well, what is it, though? I mean, you know, obviously you don't want to give away the book, but we're talking around it so much. What is it? Is there one particular story or what's the theme around Kobe's personality that obviously makes him look not so great?
Okay, so this is... I'll tell you, the book opens with a... again, this is a guy who probably wouldn't have told me this story with the same zest. There was a Laker forward you guys probably remember named Samaki Walker.
Oh, I love the story.
He was really good.
I remember him, yeah.
Yeah, he was a good player. Not a great player, but a good NBA player. 2002, they're in Cleveland, and before games, the Lakers would do these half-court shots. And everyone would take a turn, and the first guy to make it collects $100 from everyone else. So Kobe wins the $100, and he's collecting from all the different guys. Everyone's paying $100 because these are professional athletes, and obviously they walk around with $100 bills. And Samaki Walker doesn't have his $100 bill. And Kobe's like, yo, Maki, where's my money? Samaki's like, I don't have it. I'll get it for you later. He's literally wearing sweatpants. Later on, yo, Maki, where's my money? I don't have it. Later. Now they're on the bus, and he's like, Maki, I want my effing money. And Samaki's Walker's like, you'll get your money when I have it. And Kobe reaches back and smacks Samaki Walker. Samaki Walker's a big guy. Samaki Walker's like, did this MFer just punch me? Did this guy just slap me? And Shaq is literally there going like, need to beat his ass, man. And Samaki Walker snaps up and he goes, the bus is moving. They're in Cleveland. He goes, Phil, we need to stop the bus. Phil, stop the bus. And he's like, Kobe, let's go right now. And Kobe Bryant refuses to get off the bus. They get to the team hotel. Some time passes. And Samaki Walker gets a message from Kobe Bryant. And he's crying. And he's like, yo, Samaki, I'm so sorry. I don't know what came over me. You know we're friends. I'm really sorry, blah, 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 blah. And Samaki Walker just used the story to really explain, like, this was a guy who felt like he had to put something out there. And he was never as sure as himself as it seemed. He was very sure of himself as a basketball player. But he wasn't a guy who understood. He didn't have the comfort of an Iverson or a Ray Allen or a Shaq where he knew who he was. And it led to a lot of really moments like that.
The situation in Denver, you look at Kobe and he did everything wrong at every step of the way. I mean, he could not have mishandled it worse. And that's another window into his soul at that time.
You know what's amazing? I just said this to someone yesterday. I swear to God, yesterday. First time I thought of it. For a guy who was so clutch as a player, that was a huge pressure moment. That's just, you know, he's with...
That was a brick. He threw up a brick in that moment.
The detectives come to interview him. He doesn't say, I need a lawyer. The first thing you say, obviously, is, I need my attorney. I cannot... He talks to them at length. He lies at first. He explains everything that happened. He goes into it in detail. He talks about all the sexual acts. They guide him back to the room where it took place. He allows them to take evidence. It was one of the, you're kind of screaming as you read it, saying, what are you doing, man? That no, whether you're innocent or guilty, don't do this. Don't do this. And it's a crazy moment in time.
Jeff, I almost got the sense, by the way you wrote it, that the officers almost felt like guilty, that it was so easy.
I would agree to a certain degree, although I think it's more like when you interview someone as a journalist and you go in gingerly and then they just open up to you and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe, like when I did the John Rocker story and John Rocker's just going off for 5 hours and you're like, I didn't think it was going to be this easy. I think for these detectives, it's like, really? Oh, okay. You want to show us your hotel room? This is great. You know, and you want to tell us everything that happened? Great. Because they're used to guys being very guarded and obviously protective. Yeah. It was very weird.
Anyway, you got to read this book, people. I mean, if you're listening and watching this show, you love sports. Obviously, the Lakers are a big part of why sports are so popular. This is such a great book. I love everything that Jeff writes anyway, but this is so extraordinarily well done and revelatory to me, and I'm a big fan, so I can't recommend it enough. I'm not getting a dime from Jeff. I'm just telling you, Three Ring Circus is so good. Go out and get it. That's how good it is. So, Jeff, job well done. I hope you only get great things from this.
Thanks, Jeff.
Man, thank you. That means a lot to me, guys. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You got it.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.